Are we ready? Do you feel like you've had time to breathe?
No.
Okay.
Don't need that.
Thank you. All right, I will call the Metro Council meeting of January 31st, 2018 to order. We have a quorum and we will continue through. We are going to start every Metro Council both business and work session meeting off with a quick safety briefing, so please pay attention. In the event of an emergency, you will need this information. Please note we are on the third floor. In the event of a fire alarm, please exit out the nearest door and meet over by the restaurant called Table 6 in the courtyard. Defibrillator and AED is located on the right wall of the steps as you are going down towards Gravend Avenue. Just note that is two floors down. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 or notify the security agent at the front desk. And the nearest fire extinguisher is actually behind the dais back over here. So you are now completely and utterly prepped in case of an emergency. I will start out our meeting with public communication, and I have two folks. If anyone wishes to testify on an item that is not on today's agenda, now is the time to do so. If you wish to testify, please fill out a blue form and hand it to the clerk over here to my left, your right. And for all testimony, please fill out this information. And I only have two. So if anybody else wants to testify on a non-agenda item, now would be your time to turn in the blue card. So I'll call up Jeff Goodman and then Leon Porter. You can both come up so we can go for it. Mr. Goodman. Welcome.
Thank you, Council President Peterson and your colleagues on the Metro Council. I am here today to say thank you to you and your predecessors. In May of 2017, five governments, Metro, Clackamas County, Lake Oswego, Westland, and Tualatin, unanimously, 31-0, approved on a determined leap of faith to end 20-plus years of litigation and to provide the city's greater authority to move forward with respect to the Stafford Triangle. I'm pleased to let you know that Step 2, a three-party intergovernmental agreement between Tualatin, West Lynn, and Lake Oswego, was approved by Tualatin on Monday night. It flows directly from the five-party agreement. It is a continuation of the act of good faith made by everyone in May of 17. It is not the be-all and the end-all. Each of the three cities and the residents and the landowners of the Stafford area are getting something they want. No one is getting everything they want. There will be many more steps. Next steps will include, but will not be limited to, transportation and infrastructure planning as called for in the five-party agreement, governance, delineation of areas, community engagement, population projections, housing, commercial and industrial lands, etc. All of these will and must be debated vigorously. Nothing in this three-party intergovernmental agreement precludes the three cities from thinking about, discussing, and modifying the agreement by accelerating or slowing what happens in the Stafford Basin. But it must and should be done together. This agreement provides that framework for moving forward together, to take account of the externalities that will occur by any actions of one city or by the county or the state. And this is what local control is and should be about. The three cities are united in not wanting to create another Tualatin-Sherwood Road on Stafford, Rosemont, Borland, or Childs Road or Johnson Road or McVeigh Avenue. Each city already faces substantial infrastructure costs within the existing city limits and service territories. A particular interest will be the population projections for Metro as compared to the individual cities within the Metro region, which may, emphasis on the word may, preclude even having to go into the Stafford Basin. We'll wait and see. There is no moratorium on land and land development and construction in this agreement. That would require an action of the county. This is an agreement between the three cities. So I want to come back as I began to thank you a year and a half ago for taking that determined leap of faith with four other governments to say, let us move forward to put an end to over 20 years of litigation and move forward in a positive way for the future of Stafford. Thank you.
Well done on the timing, and thank you for your continued, obviously, interest in work even after leaving City Council. So thank you.
Thank you.
Leon.
Okay, hi. For the record, my name is Leon Porter. I live here in Portland. And I'd like to say first that I support and agree with the general testimony you heard from some of my fellow activists at the beginning of your last meeting. Metro needs to move as quickly as possible to reduce our region's climate impact, and that will require doing everything in your power to avoid freeway expansions, eliminate parking minimums, and charge user fees reflecting the full external costs of driving. But the most important step of all is to increase housing density along the transit corridors. Without high housing density to support heavy public transit usage, transit can actually worsen carbon emissions. The emissions from a bus or train carrying just a few riders often exceeds the emissions those riders would create driving in separate cars. To be environmentally beneficial, the transit has to be mostly full when it's running. And we need a lot of dense multifamily housing near the transit stops to get enough riders on board. So, for example, this means we need apartment buildings instead of park and ride lots near any transit stations on the Southwest Corridor. I'd also like to share some ideas for enhancing the public benefits from the affordable housing bond. First, the people in greatest need of public housing are those who are currently homeless and require support services. According to the City of Portland's estimates, in Portland alone, there are over 2,000 homeless individuals who need supportive housing with mental health care or addiction treatment. But Portland and Multnomah County only have funding to meet a small fraction of that need. So housing these most vulnerable members of our communities should be your number one priority for spending the bond money. Also, please look carefully at some more cost-effective housing options so that the bond money can provide housing for more people. For example, most of the other major West Coast metro areas are starting to fund attractive prefabricated modular housing for the homeless and people with very low incomes. They can provide decent private micro units for sometimes as little as $25,000 to $50,000 apiece. And Portland Metro needs to look into those, too. Another cost-effective housing option to consider would be buying larger existing homes and converting them into rooming houses, group homes, or apartment buildings. It's often a lot cheaper than building them from scratch. One of my best friends is homeless. She works part-time but doesn't earn enough to afford an apartment. A simple room in a rooming house with shared kitchen and bathroom would meet her needs a lot better than the van she currently sleeps in. The more people Metro can house with the housing bond money, the fewer people like her will be left out in the cold. Thank you.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Okay.
You're good. Thanks. We will certainly consider all of that and have, as we move forward into the future, and a whole list of to-do lists for this council. All right, we have our seeing no one else wanting public testimony and a non-agenda item. We'll move to the consent agenda. Today's consent agenda consists of three items, the resolution number 19-4962, the minutes for the January 17th, 2019 council meeting, and the minutes for the January 22nd, 2019 council priority setting session. Do I have a motion?
Move approval of the consent agenda.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Oh, wow, I think I actually heard that. All of you. I lost my train of thought. We definitely have a quorum. I'm totally off
Jordan,
now.
any nays?
No, I thought I said that. All right. Anybody opposed? All right. Then it passes. Thank you. I don't know what happened there. Ordinances. It is the second reading of ordinance number 19-1430. We now move to the ordinance, which is the second reading, for the purpose of amending Metro Code Chapter 2.19 to establish the Metro Affordable Housing Bond Community Oversight Committee and declaring an emergency. For the first reading and public hearing for this ordinance took place on Thursday, January 17th. I will call for a motion in a second, and then we will have staff available for questions and discussion. Do I have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
There's been a motion and a second, and now I'll ask Alyssa Gertler and Jess Larson to come on up.
Coming by myself.
You're by yourself? No, she's right coming up.
I've got
she's
my got team your... behind me.
Okay.
Hi, Metro Council. We are talking about Ordinance Number 19-1430. As Council President Peterson mentioned, this is the second read. Staff gave you a more in-depth presentation 2 weeks ago at your last council meeting. This is the housekeeping ordinance that allows us to appoint an oversight committee as required by the passage of the housing bond. And then later, as we get to the second ordinance approving the members of the committee, I will talk further about that.
Hey, any questions for Ms. Gertler? Yes, Councilor Craddock.
Thank you. Well, I definitely will be supporting this, but I do have a couple questions, and some of it is based on the feedback that we received, Councilor Lewis and I received this weekend when we met with the Committee on Racial Equity. They had their annual retreat, and there's some comments that were brought up at that meeting that I want to pass on and then ask how you might follow up on this. You guys did a really good job of including all the communities in the region to help you shape this affordable housing initiative. And then, of course, we got the support of the region to fund it. And so there was diverse groups that you reached out to. There was a diverse committee. You really went to multiple committees. I know it was a lot of work and it took a lot of time, and we should be very proud of the success of that, because that obviously contributed to the success of the bond measure. So the question that this was asked of us at the Committee of Racial Equity Retreat was, how are you going to include those people now in this? Once we cite this oversight committee and recognize that it is a diverse committee, but I think it's nine people? I didn't count. But that's not very many people. So how are we going to continue to include those same groups of people in this discussion as we move forward implementing the bond measure?
That is a fantastic question. And as you know, you'll be considering two more ordinances after this one, one to adopt the work plan for the housing program. And I think we can talk a little bit more about our expectations of both ourselves and our partner jurisdictions around racial equity, both in the development of the projects and in the oversight. And then we have yet another ordinance in front of you that talks about who the oversight committee is and the role that they'll play. And my comments in that ordinance will also speak to our expectations of how that oversight committee will engage with the broader conversation. So if it's okay, I'll wait until we're on the other two ordinances to more further answer.
Okay, thank you. I'll be fine.
Right, so ordinance pertains to the establishment of the committee. The next one pertains to the committee members and then the work plan.
Okay, is that the order?
Yeah.
Got it.
So any questions for Alyssa on the establishment of the oversight committee? No? Anything else to add?
I do have a comment I would like to make. I just want to point out that the creation of this committee is something that was drafted in the ordinance itself and in the measure that went before the voters. And so creating this committee is fulfilling one of the promises that we made to the people of the region when we went to the voters, thank you very much, and got this approval to move forward with this program. So this is one of those actions.
Correct. All right, seeing no other questions, I'll ask clerk to call the roll.
Councilor Stacey?
Aye.
Councilor Craddock?
Aye.
Councilor Chase?
Aye.
Councilor Lewis?
Aye.
Councilor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councilor Gonzalez?
Yes.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. And it passes unanimously. So we'll move on to the next, which is a resolution to appoint the task members. It is resolution number 19-4957 for the purpose of appointing the Metro Affordable Housing Bond Community Oversight Committee. And we have Ms. Gertler back again.
Okay. So, got it. So Speaking of the Oversight Committee and who they are and what they're going to do, there are actually 13 members that we got to at the end of the process, and it is an impressive group of community leaders with a wide range of experience and expertise and perspective that I think will help us fulfill our commitments to the voters. So among the 13 members, we have a pastor, an electrician, a small businessman, and a first-generation American. We have expertise from leaders who have overseen the production of hundreds of housing units, and we have expertise from people who have run organizations that connect people from homelessness to a home. We have people who are leaders in equity, leaders in healthcare, and a wide range of interesting folks. We have members who've retired after decades of service and members who are just beginning their careers. So it's hopefully a representative group that sees multiple perspectives on our work. We are looking forward to our first meeting with them to get them oriented to all of the values that are in the framework and all of the work that's gone into informing the bond program. But I wanted to talk about their role because I think it speaks to Councillor Craddock's question as well. First, what they will be responsible for is reviewing all 8 of the local implementation plans, so 7 jurisdictions plus Metro's implementation plan, to ensure each of those is consistent with the obligations of the bond and represent a reasonable plan to achieve those outcomes. And then they will make a recommendation for approval of each of those implementation strategies to the Metro Council for each of those local implementation strategies. Second, they are responsible for tracking the overall program outcomes across the region as each of the partners work to create those 3,900 homes, 1,600 of which we are expecting to be affordable at 30% median income and below, and half of which need to have at least 2 bedrooms or more. They will track all the financial expenditures, provide transparent accountability to the voters, and recommend to you any changes that might need to happen in order to keep the program on track and be successful. The staff will include the members of the committee in the reviews of the proposed projects so that they can advise on the consistency of each project with the local community's plan. And then this process will also support the community in fully understanding the financial examples, the financial decisions made along the way for implementation. So is there anything else I want to say about that? The first meeting is actually next week, and so we're happy that you're appointing them so we can get them to work on this important work. And I will leave it at that.
Any questions?
Go back to my same question. So how are we going to continue to include the diverse communities? Besides these people that are on this, how will we go back to the original stakeholders and make sure they feel part of this? Because they valued being involved in it to begin with, and how do we now keep them involved?
Well, so the Oversight Committee will have sort of the large sort of regional role of regional oversight, but also one of the things that will be that they and we will all be overseeing is the local implementation strategy of each jurisdiction, contemplating how they will move forward with the targets in their jurisdiction. And so as a requirement of completing each of those local implementation strategies, we're expecting community engagement and partnership with communities of color. And so we're moving from the adoption of the Metro Work Plan into the next phase of work, which is the creation of these local implementation strategies. We imagine, and we know at Metro for our work, we'll be doing significant outreach and involvement with many of the same stakeholders in the community to keep them involved and shaping those local implementation strategies. And that actually is sort of the next phase of the conversation, is now that we have a regional work program and have sort of established a foundation of how we want to proceed, the conversation really turns to each local jurisdiction working with their community members to make sure that they're putting together a strategy to accomplish their targets that really reflects the needs of their community. So we're expecting ongoing engagement in that process, and we will do the same at Metro.
Great, thank you. Any other questions from Ms. Gertler on the appointments?
Is anything did you want to add to that?
In terms of thinking along the lines of how community engages in this process, I think that the group of folks on this Exhibit A are just absolute rock stars, and they each have networks that are so expansive, and the networks that they bring are part of the technical expertise that we'll have at the table advising us. And I think as each jurisdiction comes up with their plan, different folks at this table have different relationships to those jurisdictions, and we'll just really have to be proactive in asking them to come forward to us with that expertise. So thanks for bringing us a group of rock stars.
Yes, thank you for inspiring them to do it.
Any comments?
I have a comment.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just really appreciate the speed with which this is moving forward, and we do have a housing crisis, and I think it is clear that we are responding as quickly as we can to that housing crisis. I guess I would just reiterate that we are on a, as we've heard this phrase before, we're on a journey, and it is one that started along quite a while ago and led up into developing and proposing and putting a bond on the ballot, a lot of work going into getting that, passed, communication with voters, and then the steps that have happened afterwards. It's important to recognize this is not the end of that journey. This is really the beginning, and it is so important and critical that we get this right and establish a relationship with voters that we can deliver really efficiently and effectively on affordable housing strategies, and to really have this beginning of a regional housing strategy. So I just want to emphasize and appreciate that that's where we are, and that there's still a lot of work left to do, and you are really gearing up well to do that. The oversight committee is just a really great component for us because we don't have the expertise here to really evaluate and analyze the programs as they're getting developed. This is, we have oversight committees in a number of areas with our Zubons and a whole range of places where we do work. This is especially important because we are launching this new area of work that is very meaningful and important for Metro. One of the things that I hope that we will continue to work toward, or that I hope we can find a way to work toward, is to have that relationship between us and this oversight committee become a very close and deep one. And I suggest that we look at ways that we can have, a joint work session or other ways that we can communicate and engage with the Oversight Committee about what are objectives that we want to see move forward in this, and what are our worries and concerns, and kind of reviewing those objectives that we've put in front of the Oversight Committee. So, if there are ways for us to have that joint conversation together, I think that would be a really nice way to establish that relationship.
That'd be a lot of rock stars in one room, but okay.
I just wanted to just clarify one point. We are staffing up within this program to make sure that we have the expertise on staff. We have a solid rock star team to get us off the mark, right? But it's going to be nice to have a diverse set of eyes, which is the whole point of the oversight committee, is to make sure that from different angles, whether it be financial or community, the actual, the backroom type of conversations about a development that we need to have in terms of how we proceed and looking at the trends to see if we're meeting all of our objectives. I think that's really important work, but we will have the expertise to at least provide that oversight from the regional level. So I'm that's a thumbs up, right? Yay, we're moving forward. Because this is a role that we not necessarily have always played in the region, and so bringing in new folks with that expertise will be great.
Yes.
Yeah. Any other comments? I just wanted to say the transparency of this committee and of the oversight team allows our general public to help make sure that they also can participate in reviewing the trends and seeing if we're on track and looking for those red flags that say, maybe we need to buckle down and look at this issue that might be a region-wide issue, whether it's a zoning issue or an SDC issue or any of these other things that are out of our control, but we can bring them up and then have a regional discussion about it so that we can make sure that all 3,900 units get down on the ground in the time period that we said that we wanted to. So thanks. Councillor Dirksen.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that saying that you're going to have an oversight committee and even taking the action that we just took to actually create the structure of it, that's the easy part. The hard part is, how do you put together a committee that's truly going to be able to do the job that needs to be done? And I think an awesome job has been done, and I put it that way because I didn't really have anything to do with it. an awesome job has been done of putting together a committee that truly represents the various segments of our larger community, but also individuals with an interest and knowledge of the situation so that they can literally hit the ground running, which is why this is an emergency that we get this in place now. And in response to the comments or questions about public engagement, when this committee sees the projects, that's when the projects have already been crafted and exist, and review of those projects. The best time for people to be involved in this program as citizens is when our public, our regional partners that have housing authority are identifying and crafting those projects for their communities, for people to be involved in that process and make sure that their voices are heard with regard to what the need is, where the need is, and whether or not the things that are being considered by those housing authorities are going to meet the need. That's going to be the primary place up front where input is really helpful. By the time it gets to our committee, and there will be opportunity for people to comment on the projects that they receive for review, but that is a time to make comment, but not the best time. The best time is up front when it's still being created.
All right. Any further discussion, questions for Ms. Gertler? Call for a motion and second.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Councillor Gonzalez and seconded by Councillor Lewis. Is there any further discussion? Then I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Councillor Lewis.
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Yes.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Chase.
Aye.
Council President Peterson.
Aye. It unanimously is approved. So thank you. Big milestone. Now the next milestone. The next resolution is number 19-4956 for the purpose of approving the Metro Affordable Housing Bond Measure Program Work Plan. Ms. Gertler. The third time.
So, as you recall, we are trying to build, say it with me, 3,900 homes. I feel like we can all say it together now.
1,500 deeply affordable.
Half of them two bedrooms and bigger. And that's a pretty ambitious and historic commitment that we at Metro have taken on, right? This is the first regional housing investment strategy of its kind in the country that we know of. And so, first of all, we wouldn't be here without the leadership of all of you. And so it's very exciting to actually be at this point. So thank you. In terms of the work plan, as Councillor Chase and others have acknowledged, since the election, we have been working for the past 3 months as fast as we can to operationalize the policy direction set forth in the framework that the council approved when you referred the measure. And I'd like to acknowledge Emily Lieb, Jess Larson, Megan Gibb, who have really been working around the clock for the last 3 months to get this work plan in place. Right, so the work plan is the place where we are going to take the policy direction and turn it into an actual program of work, and it is intended to establish organizational structures and provide some certainty for our jurisdictional partners and our development industry partners who are going to be the primary implementers of the housing bond. So as soon as the measure was passed, staff called back the stakeholder tables and the technical tables and a broader community of interested parties to talk further about how we will take the framework and actually turn it into a work program. We convened several focused community discussions on best practices to advance racial equity and community engagement specifically with this bond, and then these conversations have informed the development of the work plan overall. In addition to the community engagement, we have been working very closely with the 7 participating jurisdictions to achieve clarity and come to agreement on all the elements of the work plan. Didn't I make that sound easy? These detailed and complicated conversations have covered things like how funds will be passed from Metro to the participating jurisdictions into the housing projects, how community engagement is intended to build public support for affordable housing in places where there might be neighborhood opposition, and how local strategies are going to set a course to advance racial equity and and set the oversight committee up for the ability to evaluate those outcomes toward our success. So we've all acknowledged this is a milestone. This is complicated stuff. We're making it up. There hasn't ever been a regional housing bond before, and it reflects a new way of coordinating and partnering with our local government partners. So we're pretty proud that we're at this moment with you, and we are excited that we are moving from this step now into the next steps, which we are, with the adoption of today's work plan, we turn into the local implementation strategy phase of the work, which really will focus on the jurisdictional partners as they each set out to create a tailor-made plan that will fit their jurisdiction and how they intend to achieve the housing goals they've been assigned. We expect this work to be done through active engagement with the local community, in particular with historically marginalized communities, a requirement that is specifically prescribed in the work plan. Obviously, this work will have to be done in close partnership with us at Metro. We are also conducting our own local implementation strategy for the part of the program that is the regional site acquisition program. And we will be trying to set the standard for engagement and best practices around racial equity with our work. Our expectation is that everybody will have a completed local implementation strategy by this summer and presented to the Oversight Committee and then to the Metro Council for approval as part of the intergovernmental agreements. And then once the local implementation strategies and intergovernmental agreements are completed, jurisdictions are going to have to get to work quickly to get the funds distributed through to the viable projects, probably through notice of funding opportunities and other strategies that they may employ. And then, of course, in the middle of doing the local implementation strategies that are actually being built, we are also welcoming our seven partnering jurisdictions to bring forward what we are calling phase one projects, a demonstration project earlier than the local implementation strategy. The idea of these projects is to have an opportunity to learn while we're doing it, to build our systems, and essentially have some experience that helps set our plans going forward. The projects are not all identified at this time, and it's possible that not every jurisdiction will bring forward a phase one project. However, we do expect to see some early promising investments in affordable housing, hopefully this spring. And because these projects are being brought forward as an opportunity to learn, they will be existing outside of our formal and complete IGAs and local implementation strategies, which means we as staff will be bringing each of these projects to the Metro Council to you for approval before any commitments of funding get made. And that is really all I want to say, unless you have some additional questions for me.
Any questions on the work plan?
I would like to acknowledge some of this work.
Councilor Stacey, we can do that now or after the during discussion?
I have discussion.
Okay. Go ahead, Councilor Craddock.
Thank you. I wanted to clarify our Metro Site Acquisition Program. Justin and I had a little bit of time to talk today. I wanted to make sure I understand this. So you've identified the percent of funds that each of the jurisdictions that are eligible to receive these funds in the program, and you identified the percent of funding that each of them will be receiving. They will use that money then to figure out how they're going to build affordable housing. Metro has... we have about $62 million out of the fund that we were going to use for site acquisition. And so the question is, what is the plan for that site acquisition? And during the campaign, I was thinking of this as funds that we would use similar to how we use our transit-oriented development funds, where we would purchase land along transit corridors for future development when we know that that corridor is developing and there is a risk of probably values going up and moving people out that live along there. So I just want to clarify how those funds are being used and make sure that's still the plan. Because I know when Jess and I were talking, we might even help use some of those funds to help some of these cities purchase land too more immediately and instead of later in the distribution of the funds.
I'm glad you asked that, because I think it's an important point to clarify that the regional site acquisition program is intended to help accomplish the targets in the same timeline as we're expecting all of our partners. It's not a long-term land bank as some of our other transit-oriented development land acquisitions have been over the years. This is intended to help deliver the affordable housing outcomes in 5 years. And so while we might use some of the similar criteria around sites that are at risk of displacement, sites that are close to transit, we don't envision a long-term play here. We envision a much shorter turnaround in partnership with either private developers, nonprofit developers, or our local partners. And so as we move forward to develop our strategy, we do have some criteria that we are using to sort of set the stage. We would anticipate that all of these, any site acquisition we do will be in partnership with a local implementation jurisdiction. So if we were to buy something in Portland or Gresham, we would work with that jurisdiction to figure out how that fits together to accomplish the goals. As you know, our money is focused on the land itself and not on the financing, and so it will have to be part of a larger conversation with development partners around how our investments fit in. But we have learned through the conversations up to this point that there are certain sites and certain projects where regional capacity is needed to do things that are either more complex or work on sites that are more constrained, or where we're trying to accomplish something more ambitious than what we might ordinarily do. For example, we're looking at sites in places like Southwest Corridor where there are constraints of where the actual light rail will be built, and so some of the land transactions that might have been straightforward are a little more complex. There are a wide range of sort of opportunities of complicated sites that may have brownfields, they may have ownership issues, there might be sort of the level of complexity that Metro specializes in some of these, and so we envision that our work will be focused on sort of some of the more regionally significant, higher capacity sites, but all of that work will be done in partnership with the implementing jurisdictions.
And it will be spent sooner than later.
Yes, I think that's a key point to clarify.
Okay. And it will not be used to bank. It won't sit there vacant. We'll have a partner on the other end that's ready to move on actual development after the property has been purchased.
Or we will have agreed with a partner that we will issue a notice of funding availability and do a RFP or something like that, like we have done for other property we've owned. So there may be various disposition vehicles, but it will all be in partnership.
Awesome.
I'm not going to oppose that, but it is different than what I was, as we were going through the campaign. It is different information than I had during the campaign, or that I was assuming, I guess, maybe during the campaign. So, I won't oppose it.
Can I respond to that?
Yes, Councilor.
Because I grasp Councilor Craddock's concern, and if our only intent would be to provide property for our partners to do their projects on, then that would kind of negate the reason why we would have the set aside for Metro if we were just going to spend it the way they would have spent it anyway. For me, the importance of having this set aside for Metro is so that we can respond quickly when we know of properties that are available, even if there hasn't already been a project identified by one of our public partners. And so I think the intent was for the money to be able to purchase properties, if I would use the term, unilaterally, not just when the property's been identified by someone else.
Right.
So we need that flexibility, and staff needs to understand that is at least a portion of the intent, is so that we as the regional government can respond quickly to the opportunity for property before a regional partner may even be prepared to deal with it.
I mean, I think we're all, frankly, all of the local partners are working hard to look at land and sites that are suitable for affordable housing around the region, and it's a complicated conversation. Transactions aren't straightforward. We are not trying to behave in a unilateral way, but recognize that there are sort of different projects that require different partnerships and different funding strategies. Many of the projects that we'll see getting built over the next 5 years won't actually be built by a public agency. They'll be built by a private developer or a nonprofit. Those might be the kind of partnerships we would envision with our sites rather than just partnering with the jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Any other questions on the work plan?
So it's along the same thread, a concern, but one that I feel is going to be addressed in good faith and has been expressed by several of the partners. So my question is, of the $62 million, how is that exactly going to contribute to the above targets if we're talking about projects of regional significance? Is there, with the conversations that we've had with local jurisdictions, is there a specific sense of, I recognize that we have a separate pot of money, otherwise we would directly provide it to our local partners directly. But for me, I guess the concern that partners have shared with me and that I have, and I would like to share with council too, so is
if we're investing in certain projects of regional significance that aren't necessarily contributing to some of the other jurisdictions' production targets, where's that accountability with us, and how are we communicating with our partners? How are we envisioning to fix that? Because I know you've heard it. I heard it yesterday and today. So please share.
You made me bring up professional help to answer this question.
Thank you, Councilor Gonzalez, for the question. This is one we've spent much time discussing with our seven implementing jurisdictions from across the region. And the first part of my answer is sort of remembering back when we were building this measure and how it was we came to bring together the seven jurisdictions, the three housing authorities, and the four cities who represent cities receiving federal funding, CDBG cities or entitled cities, as they recall, or as they call themselves, and Metro, because there was this recognition that the end goal is to get the resources out into our community using existing capacity in our jurisdictions to be as efficient as possible. And one of the ways to achieve that efficiency is to use the expertise we have in-house, which is land and site acquisition. And so one of the strategies behind the site acquisition program is this is capacity we can bring to our regional partners to help them be successful in achieving their goals and their unit production. And yes, it takes some sense of balance in how an agreement and partnership and how we're going to be able to use that regional revenue or regional source of funding for site acquisition and carefully proportion it out across the region to those seven partners while also being opportunistic with the realities of the market. And that is why there was significant work in the drafting of the document with our partners to address that the reality is these are our best intentions, and if we can't, the market doesn't allow us to proportionately distribute, or there are reasons why it's not working as intended, we as partners can come back to the table and figure out how to adjust the targets accordingly.
And if I can just add one more thing, as Jess mentioned, we've been having this conversation with our partners for a long time because it's an important question. And in my years of working on public redevelopment projects, I will say that doing land acquisition publicly is not a good way to do it. And just the fact that I joke that every time you say the words housing bond, property prices go up. And so part of this is to allow us to actually use the public resources wisely in a way that actually allows us to get the biggest bang for our buck and not spend a lot of public process on site acquisition, putting bullseyes on maps that then bring property owners to the table in a way that doesn't help us get a big bang for the buck. So that's the other piece.
Thank you for the explanation. I wanted to bring it up because it was something that the partners and the elected leaders in my district were asking, so I wanted to put it on the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the work plan?
Council President, I actually do. I have one other very small thing, and I apologize. It's the nitpickiness in me. I did come across in my review of the document, I came across what I assume is a typographical error that could cause some confusion. And if you have the document with you, it's on page 6 under approval and revision process. And the second sentence says, one local implementation strategy has been approved by local governing bodies. I believe the word should be once.
You got it.
Yes.
So it's a process timing, not identifying a single strategy.
Thank you for noting that. It is good to have a Metro councillor who is doing that.
You may now call
take
me
notice the rest of you.
Councillor Harrington 2.0.
Councillor Craddock.
Thank you. So another question that I was asked, and I'd like to have you respond to it. So I was asked by one of the jurisdictions is why we're not identifying targets in our land acquisition, the number of houses that are going to be built in our land acquisition process. How should I respond to that?
It's challenging to directly respond because it's complicated. So this is in reference to, I think it's Exhibit A in the plan, which speaks to the distribution of the resources across the region to those 7 plus 8 metro jurisdictions. And then the related housing unit production targets also distributed according to the resources that are distributed. And while the metro portion distributes land acquisition or site acquisition resources, the targets are in relation to the above jurisdictions. And there's it's hard to state so clearly. You can't count the units twice, and so Metro's land isn't directly developing the units. The development dollars will develop the units, and so, but Metro, the site acquisition resources will purchase the site that contribute to the ultimate development of the units through the development dollars that each jurisdiction has. So we could take a portion off and assign them to Metro, but ultimately those units will never be developed without the development resources of our partners. And so this is just the simplest way we could demonstrate how those that responsibility is distributed across the region, knowing fully that Metro is a complete partner in achieving those unit outcomes. It's our ultimate responsibility.
The worst that will happen is we'll get more than 3,900 units.
But to be clear, we are not the developer.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So to put the risk and the management of meeting the targets on those entities that are actually receiving the dollars and hold them accountable, I think this is the best way you could go, especially not knowing the sites. And being able to say, oh, we've got 12 sites, they can accommodate this kind of density and make some sort of assumption. So not our role.
Thank you.
Yeah. Are there any other questions about the work plan? No? All right. I will call for a motion on the resolution with the typographical issue.
It's a discussion opportunity.
I know. I'm asking for the motion and second, and then a discussion.
Absolutely right.
Yep. So calling for a motion on the resolution with this one word to be revised that's been noted into the record. Do I have a motion and a second?
I'll move for approval to replace, in addition, replace the word one with once.
Is there a second?
Second. Scrivener's here.
It's been moved by Councillor Craddock and seconded by Councillor Chase. Is there any further discussion? Yes, Councillor Stacey.
Thank you, Madam President. A few days ago, I made a noise that must have sounded a little bit like whining. At my sudden recognition or discovery that this matter would be before Council today for action, I hadn't remembered that there had been a briefing. I hadn't remembered that it had been put on Granicus. I didn't know that I was supposed to check Granicus instead of getting a briefing. And it wasn't a tantrum, but it was more than I would have expected. And I'm going to point out, first of all, that I'm very comfortable with the document. I found time to read it, another benefit of being a transit writer, coming back from the state of the city, Hillsboro, by a train, and after dropping off Councillor Sanssouci at his stop, I continued on uninterrupted reading this great document. I found one other typo beyond the once, the one that said once, but I have subsequently forgotten it, and I didn't earmark that page, and I didn't bring that copy in with me. But thank you to staff for getting me a printed version and indulging this elderly gentleman. It's a reflection not of inattention, but of the fact that we're in the midst of developing this owner's manual that encapsulates what we did in response to our advisory process, the chief operating officer's recommendation, the framework that we and other supporters took to the voters, has now in pretty short time been encapsulated in this, this owner's manual that provides direction to us and our seven local partners to implement all of that in not black letter law, but pretty darn close to an administrative regulation in its precision and completeness. And yet there'll be more, as the document itself points out, there will be more agreements to come. We're going to do this because nobody, not even a cranky older member of this council, should act as a bottleneck on a process that needs to keep moving rapidly, because we face a housing crisis. We face a parks and nature need, and we're working our bottoms off on that. We face a transportation crisis, and we're beginning to lay the framework for proposals to do something about our transportation needs. And we're doing, over the past 23 days, a job on all three of those major initiatives, one already approved by the voters, two to come. And I remember speculating that President Peterson would bring a new mode of operation to this council and to this agency, and dang if I'm not the first one to complain about it, I take it all back. This is a mark of the accelerated pace that we believe this crisis deserves, and a note to the editors of Willamette Week that when you ask, it's January 30th, where's all the housing? We are showing the progress necessary to make sure as soon as one of our partners has a project ready to go, the dollars will flow. I'm very impressed. I thank you for the hard work, and I'll check my whining at the door.
Any further discussion, Councillor Lewis?
I pushed my button.
Oh, my God, you actually pushed the button.
I did that, too, yeah.
I didn't.
But thank you. So to Councillor Stacey's comments and to the presentation, which used the word quickly many times, I've been in government long enough to know there's government quickly and then there's quickly.
Right.
And we're actually moving quickly. So thank you to staff. But I think we also need to set the tone for our local partners that quickly is quickly. It is about to get freezing, and there are people who are sleeping in their cars. There are people who are sleeping in vulnerable situations on the street. We are not the only answer. We are not going to be there this winter, not even maybe next winter, but we need to know that we're going to be there for our vulnerable community members. And to that end, I'd really like to make sure that we use our bully pulpit, particularly as councillors, but potentially also as an agency, to spotlight the local processes to make sure that not only engagement can occur, but they feel like they have the backing from their community and engagement to move quickly and rapidly. I think one of the tensions in this work is that we are going to be making sure that we have a public process that is sometimes comparing apples to oranges and sometimes it's comparing apples to tomatoes. And we're just going to have to put those fruits out on the table and say, what are we doing? And be honest about it with each other and with the community. You know, we have outlined some really important points, including risk controls in our target guidelines. And they look different in every community. And so speaking to what it looks like in my community, a large portion of my district is Clackamas County. Clackamas County is just one of our seven local partners, but within Clackamas County, there are many different neighborhoods, different communities. And I see real opportunity here, having heard from leaders in different cities and jurisdictions in Clackamas, a real appetite to learn more, to get engaged, to get going. And I think we have an incredible opportunity to bring resource to have affordability in communities up until this point that have been considered exclusive and still maintain that reputation. And it's going to take us all working together. We are one very significant piece of funding, but at the programmatic level, vouchers, supportive housing services, the connective glue of a system addressing our vulnerable individuals, needs us, but we're not going this alone. So I would also encourage us to just keep our minds open and our ears open as other developments occur. Development like lowercase d. I think we are going to have like uppercase D development and lowercase development D. And then the last thing I want to speak to is racial equity strategies that are baked into how we do our work and how we've put our framing together, but to make sure that they transfer over, at least in an appropriate one-off to our local jurisdictions, meet them where they're at, work within the frameworks they have, but make sure they're using the frameworks they have. And with that, just thank you. Thank you for councillors who were here well before I arrived and moved my purple chair into the office. And thank you to staff who have been extremely diligent in addressing this. So thank you.
I'll keep it short. Just great, great work, especially with Washington County and City of Hillsborough and City of Beaverton. had the opportunity to connect with them over the course of the last week. And I know that the process over the last 3 months since it was approved, it has been a process worth $650 million of the questions, the stress. But everyone that I've spoken to has said that the process over the course of the last 3 months and to where we are now, people feel very positive. So I want to thank you for that, for crafting a program, for crafting an owner's manual that is firm but flexible enough to meet the diverse needs of our seven jurisdictions that are very different places. And something else I want to share is how powerful and how significant I think it is that we've set, with our regional investment strategy, that we've set the precedent of what it looks like to lead with race and how Metro will do business in the region, especially with Parks and Nature and T2020 moving forward. Our partners are having those conversations even more so than before. And it's thank you to the council, to all of the staff. I know that we still have a lot more work to do. So thank you.
Any further discussion? Councillor Chase?
I will just only add appreciation for the language and the commitment to leading with racial equity that shows up over and over again, and that you are providing a model in our own program and our own acquisition program for jurisdictions to be able to do that. And this is an opportunity for us to be partnering by providing resources for jurisdictions to really address their need, and in return, we're really asking them to step up and commit to our racial equity strategies. So just want to add my appreciation and support for really continuing that component.
Anybody else?
President Peterson, may I interrupt? Apologies. Thank you for your gracious and words of gratitude and your leadership in getting us to this moment. I feel it is necessary to say I was happy to be called forward and answer these questions, but the woman who should be sitting in this seat and hearing all your words is Miss Emily Lieb. This 40-page document has been hers for the last 6 months and more, and she has ushered it around the building, up and down the stairs to our Office of Metro Attorneys and all across this region. So please give big gratitude to her, especially in this incredible milestone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Emily.
As I close this out, thank you to the entire team who put this together. But I think throwing it back, Councillor Stacey, the three of us who come into this audacious set of regional investment strategies that you all set, you set your standard of the amount of work you wanted to accomplish on behalf of the region. And so pushing forward in the way that we have is really based on the goals that you set for yourself. And we're just trying to get that done, I think, in the most expedient way possible, but I think calling the question is always appropriate on whether we've had enough time, because what I'd rather do is take a moment and breathe and say, have we looked at it from every angle that we need to look at it, or do we need to take a quick step back and then move forward? Because if we move forward too quickly,
we'll have to come back,
and if we've left anybody behind, then we have to go several steps back. So I'm always open to that, and I appreciate you pointing out at the time that there might have been a feeling of anxiety. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I need to do a better job of watching my emails.
So don't we all?
Lives, but I appreciate that sentiment.
Don't we all? But I believe in the end that this council and staff and all of the work that's been done through the COO's office and everything that the staff has done has gotten us to this point, so that we can proceed quickly.
Amen.
Yes. So with and that, we've had a motion and a second. Mm-hmm. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Chase.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Aye.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Council President Peterson.
Aye. And the motion passes. Congratulations.
We've gained another agreement.
Are we done for the day? No.
No.
All right.
Far from it.
We are moving on to resolution number 19-4954 for the purpose of adopting an agenda for the 2019 Oregon legislative session. It looks like Tucker is still down in Salem doing the work for us, and we have Andy Shaw before us to help us move forward through a quick presentation on our legislative agenda.
That's exactly right. So Andy Shaw, Government Affairs Director of Metro. Randy's already down in Salem. The session's already begun. But he did have a chance to have two sessions before you talking through the legislative principles and the also attached legislative priorities. We've made a couple changes to the principles per your discussion, created a separate housing affordable housing section and clarified some of the language there. We also, just highlighting, I think it was Councillor Gonzalez suggested, fleshing out the solid waste principle, so it was clear about end of life or life cycle approach and our sort of stewardship policy. So those are both contained in the principles. Highlights for the priorities, trying to achieve a cap and invest legislation this year that recognizes our climate smart strategy. One more run at the Household Hazardous Waste Stewardship Bill. We're feeling very confident this year that we can hopefully get that one passed. Support for policies and funding around affordable housing, protection for tenants, more tools for the state and for local governments to increase the supply of housing and improve affordability. Ongoing work on transportation projects, and we lead the Brownfield Coalition, and we're making a run at getting a tax credit to add to the policy work we've done in the past years with that coalition down in the legislature. There are many, many other items on here. Also, I should highlight the defense of our land use decisions and the land use policy for the region. Once again, we're seeing some legislation come forward that would undo some of the decisions this council and this region has made. So we're entering dialogue to try to avoid bad outcomes in the land use arena. With that, we would recommend approval of the resolution.
Thank you. Any questions on the resolution itself? Seeing none, do I have a motion and a second?
Motion to approve.
Moved by Councillor Gonzalez and seconded by Councillor Lewis. Any further discussion on this matter? Seeing none, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Councillor Chase.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez?
Aye.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Council President Peterson?
Aye. The motion passes. Thank you. Thank you. All right, we're on to Chief Operating Officer Communications.
So in Martha. The spirit of talking about safety, I thought I'd talk to you about snow. Uh-huh. And I thought I'd talk to you about snow because many of you know I hate snow. And so I'm hopeful by talking about snow that it won't snow. So that you'll all be so prepared for what happens at Metro when it snows that the snow will not actually come. So I think you know that we have many facilities throughout the region. And in the event of inclement weather of any kind, the decision about whether to stay open or who to call to work in those sites is actually made by the manager or department director in charge of those facilities. In other words, I don't sit in my house in my slippers, my bunny slippers, making decisions for all of the facilities. Whoever is the on-site director of those facilities makes the decision. They do a site-by-site analysis and evaluate the risk to the public of a decision about whether to open or close. In some cases, it's riskier to the public to stay open, so we close. In some cases, it's riskier to the public for us to close, and so we stay open. So, like, for example, a lot of our solid waste facilities is actually riskier if we close. So I just wanted you to know that we delegate that down through the chain of command. We all make these decisions super early in the morning. Sometimes the zoo director knows far enough in advance that it's going to be really dangerous for the public, and so he makes the decision actually often much earlier than the rest of us. In all of our facilities, even if we close, however, it doesn't mean that the staff aren't reporting. We do have essential personnel at all of our sites who end up reporting. So just because we've closed doesn't mean you shouldn't have sympathy for those folks who had to get their snow tires or chains out and their yak tracks on their feet and had to report to work anyway. But here at MRC, we make a decision about whether to stay open or delay opening about 5:30 in the morning. We wait that long because that's how long it takes for us to get our facilities staff here in a bad weather day and to actually do an analysis of what's actually going on around the building. I wish I could make it earlier, even though I don't like morning, because it would help those folks who have to decide whether they're going to commute in. But the reality is that if I do that, then I have to force folks to come in here even earlier, and that just is, on balance, seems like an unreasonable thing. Like the other sites, the primary decision about what to do here in this building is made based on an evaluation of the safety of the public who are going to come here. So also, as much as I wish I could anticipate all the places people might be coming from to come here, really the decision is about this building itself, and is it safe to get in and out of this building, both the parking area and also the sidewalks and other parts around the building. I also have a bias, which is government's here to be here for people when the chips are down, so you should know that. So my bias is that we open if it's all safe to do so. If we do close or delay, everything that happens in this building is closed or delayed. So if there's a meeting that y'all are thinking you're going to come to that's scheduled at 8 o'clock and we're doing a delayed opening, that meeting won't be happening at 8 o'clock in the morning. Or if we close for the whole day, if there's an evening meeting, it's also canceled. Okay. We post all of our information on the website. We notify all the media, so it shows up on all the media sites. And we also have our own notification system, but for a variety of reasons, it's voluntary to join that notification system. So please talk to your policy advisor, because if you want a text message like most people do these days, you need to sign up to get the text message through the notification system. Okay. That's the big thing I wanted to talk about. As I say, I'm hopeful by talking about it. That means it doesn't happen, because I hate snow. It's cold. It's cold. And once it's not cold anymore, it's wet. And that's just all bad. Okay. Anybody have any questions about that?
No, but I'm now remembering delayed closures, having worked here 20 years ago.
Yeah. That usually what happens is usually it's not the forecast. And we have a long discussion about the forecast. The National Weather Service, thank goodness the government's opening. They do an amazing job of showing you an hour-by-hour analysis. Every once in a while, as in the case of the council dinner that we had at Councillor Dirksen's house a couple years ago, the National Weather Service is actually wrong about the timing for the snow event, but they're usually pretty accurate, so we can usually make a pretty good decision about whether to close or do a delayed opening. Okay, that's all I wanted to say about snow, but in the spirit of making sure we're emphasizing safety, if you do read on the website that I've closed the building, please don't come. Please don't come. And if you have questions about that, give me a call. You're all welcome to call me on my cell phone, because I will actually probably be here. But I just told you not to come, and then hypocritically, I will put my yak tracks in and I will walk into the building. So, all right.
Thank you for your dedication.
No, it's about keeping. Never mind. Anyway, thank you.
Any questions about snow days or closures, or do you have any further questions? All right. Any councilor communications? For now or for work session? Okay. Councilor Craddock?
Just report. Last night, the Main Streets on Halsey Committee met. This is an outcome of the East Metro Connections Plan for the three cities that reside along, the three cities outside of Portland that reside along Halsey Court, the Halsey Street. That's Fairview, Wood Village, and Troutdale. And they've been working together along with Multnomah County and, of course, Metro, to begin to look at the Halsey corridor from a Main Street perspective and what can be done with that corridor to improve, influence economic development, housing, amenities that the three cities might not have. So they're making continuous progress. Last night, the discussion focused around some of the amenities they want, infrastructure changes they would like to see occur along Halsey. They're looking at the notion of roundabouts that would allow traffic to flow through as opposed to signals. And another big piece that they're looking at is because McMinniman's Edgefield has purchased a fairly significant parcel of property that used to be owned by Multnomah County, formerly called the Pig Farm. They are working at McMinniman's as part of this discussion and looking at how the transportation infrastructure that will be built along there. So this would be an ongoing process. Metro has been able to give them some funding to help with the planning. But anyway, I'm just really pleased that there is enthusiasm and interest, and the three cities are working together on this. So it's good progress is being made.
Very nice. Thank you. Councilor Gonzalez?
This is for Councilors Dirksen, Craddock, and Chase, because the rest of us went to the Hillsborough State of the City. So I first off, I want to thank Councillor Lewis, Council President Peterson, and Councillor Stacey. And just kidding, I know everyone has stuff to do. The event was very well done. There were elementary students singing songs. There were activities with gloves. But most importantly, the city laid out several priorities, among them houselessness, economic development, and prosperity for communities of color. Our housing strategy is a part of their portfolio, and also transportation. So I'm feeling really positive about the work with the city of Hillsborough, and I want to thank everyone for coming out to the illustrious Subdistrict 4. Thank you.
Awesome. Any other councilor communications? Yeah. Councilor Dirksen.
Yesterday, President Peterson and I traveled to Albany for the quarterly OMPOC meeting. This is a meeting of the 8 MPOs in the state of Oregon. And so we had a meeting in their new Carousel Museum, which is really beautiful in their much revitalized downtown area. And later in the day, we did get a tour of some of the downtown and saw some of the great things that they've done with in the regard of revitalizing their historic downtown. The things that happened of interest during the agenda, one of the first things that happened was we needed to elect new officers, and I was elected chair for the year to make up for me not being on JPAC anymore, I guess. I don't know. I had too much time on my hands. So, but that was a nice gesture on the part of the rest of the MPOs. At our last meeting, we had a fairly contentious meeting talking about potential transportation planning rule changes, which we were not in agreement with the other MPOs around the state, but they still chose to pick me to run the group for the year. We had a general update from ODOT. Jerry Bohard from ODOT gave a general update. A couple of the points there was the process that they're going through. As you may know, Matt Garrett is leaving as director, so they're going to be going through a process with the OTC to identify a new director, and also announce that the state's Safe Routes to School program has identified 24 projects that they did not state what they were because the recipients have not necessarily been told yet, but that decision has been made. We had an update on the ODOT Speed Methodology Work Group, which is a group that's looking at the basic way that speed limits around the state are created and identified. The process that's currently used dates way back to probably around World War I. And it basically is set on, it's the 85% rule. You measure how fast people go on the street, and you dismiss how fast the fastest 15% go, and you set the speed limit at the 85%. There's a recognition that the primary thing is how fast can we get cars through this zone. And that's not the only issue, particularly in urbanized areas, which all the MPOs represent. So they're very supportive of that, of that work. We also discussed the 2019 legislative session, and we identified three priorities for OMPOC, which were, and I, President Peterson, I could not find the document where that was listed, the action. The ones that I remember was support the work of the speed methodology work group. One was in the Safe Routes to School program. Right now, a 40% local match of funds is required, and that is beyond the ability of many smaller jurisdictions. So they requested, and it's 20% when the city is under 5,000 people. They're requesting that be halved to 20% and 10% respectively instead of 40 and 20. And the last one, I believe, was continuing an additional support for Connect Oregon programmatic funding. Those are the three issues that they had. They're not our issues, but they're not in conflict with any of ours as well, so we were comfortable in signing on to that priority list as well. We also heard from Marcia Hoskins at ODOT Public Transportation. She's a transportation manager on transit safety plans. This is a new program that the federal government requires and how the state is addressing that. We got some information on the Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program platform, which is a computer program that could be used statewide for tracking of MTIP projects around the state, regardless of jurisdiction. And then we also heard, the Safe Lane Transportation Coalition. This is from Lane County. They talked about things that they're doing within their program, similar to our Vision Zero and efforts to improve the safety of their transportation system. During the working lunch, we had a roundtable where each region got to share their region's hottest topic. I took advantage of the opportunity to share with the other people in the state our efforts with the regional investment strategy, starting with the affordable housing bond last year and working through the other areas that we've identified to meet the needs and the challenges that we have in our region. Great discussion, a lot of interest there in the things we're doing. Then Lake McTighe from Metro gave a presentation on tactical design and speed zones. It's a small projects that jurisdictions can take on, and typically they're temporary just to see if they work, like temporary roundabouts, changing curb outlines, things like that, to improve safety, to identify whether or not those projects then work, and then perhaps turn them into a permanent project. And then finally, looking at next meeting, we meet quarterly and trying to decide where those would be and what would be on the agenda for each meeting. I met with Paul Thompson, who is the OMPOC primary staff person, sat down with him and kind of started drafting out a work program for OMPOC for the year and what other kinds of things we could do to address transportation issues, particularly around the state. And then we discussed where those meetings could be, and I tentatively suggested that perhaps we could host the OMPOC meeting here in Portland in August. But I'll need to talk to staff about that and see if we can move forward with that. No commitment was made, but we do need to make that determination soon. And that's my report.
Thank you, Councillor Dirksen. I was going to suggest that we take all of August off.
What's that?
Anyway, anybody else? Councillor Lewis.
In the spirit of communication, to prove that I'm not doing nothing, I don't have such well-prepared notes, but last night I had the opportunity to tour Bridge Meadows 1.0 up in Councillor Chase's district, a fantastic living community that combines good social supports for vulnerable families and children, but also housing that is accessible to seniors. And had a number of good interactions with residents there, but also talked about both funding and policy questions that we may encounter further down the road. But just wanted to bring up Bridge Meadows because they're a scalable model. They started out in North Portland, Beaverton. Now they're looking east, and they're going as far as Redmond or Bend. Stop number one in my affordable housing tour that will continue throughout the year, and I guess I will be sharing with you my journey.
Poetic.
Yeah, on a second note, I want all of you fellow counselors to know that I will not be in the building tomorrow or Monday. Change of pace for me, but I will be traveling to the Young Electeds Network's Women's Conference, where I will have the opportunity to attend a few seminars on points of interest, particularly relevant to our employer of choice strategies around family leave and family-friendly workplace policies.
Awesome. Anybody else? I'll just note that Congressman Blumenauer came in. He had a little bit extra time, swung in here to talk a little bit about our agenda and asked to see our legislative agenda, and now I'm beginning to think maybe we should just send it out to the entire delegation so that everybody has the same information and knows kind of where our heads are at in terms of just the state. And maybe once we complete our agenda setting and start to go into a strategic plan, we could also share with them what our strategic goals are later this year. So that's the only thing I would add. If there are no further communications, then we are adjourned from this meeting. Thank you.